But you got Shelav Yehuda, and let's. That's as far as I want to get right now. But you guys should love Yehuda. But Yom Abi Adoni, the Berna, the Dech, the Ber, Baznei, Adoni, the Ayicharab Chaba, the Dech, Ki Kamoch Kiparo. Now, a lot of us, I would say all of us, most of us, some of us, that we've learned this before, and we know the Midrashic background. And I'm just going to say a word about the Midrashic background, and then we'll actually see some of it inside to get some flavor of it. But I'm going to already make a very strong value judgment to start. And then you'll see why that everything I'm saying is completely not just justified, but is right. I know I'm not supposed to say that, but I'll say it nonetheless. And that is that there's this wonderful Midrashic perspective about Yehuda standing up, and I'm going to rip this place down, I'm going to knock down the walls, he's going to channel his inner Shimshon, and you know, just say a word and the whole place is coming down, and him and the others, and the whole thing is incredibly precarious. So we're going to look into that, but I just hope that all of us know that that's very, very far from being pshat. Okay, I'm sorry for saying that, but it's very far from being pshat. So you can then say, yeah, but Rashi says it and others say it, and I'll say, nope, correct. They say it. So what do you want me to do? You want me to stop now? But they do. They say it. So let's take a look and try to understand, and then hopefully understand the dynamic of what's taking place here. Rashi v'ayicharbcha mikana talmanchi tiberilov kashot. But by the way, I'm not exactly sure why that is. Don't be mad at me. So he's saying, oh, don't be mad at me because I'm giving you a reason to be mad at me. What's the reason to be mad at me? That he's speaking with great anger. That Yehuda... See, what's the problem? The problem is that Chazal see Yehuda as being a melech. And Yehuda's being a melech. He's acting like a melech, which means, who's the real melech here? Which, you know, for us, it actually takes us to a very interesting place because we're right here at this crossroads between Yosef being the pretend king, and he's not really a king. When we were growing up also, we told you he's a viceroy. I don't think any of us ever heard the word viceroy in any other context, right? Never heard the word viceroy any place else. Yosef is the viceroy of, I guess that makes power the roy. I don't know. He makes him the viceroy of Egypt. But he's the pretender. He's not the real king. The real king is, well, now you can decide, is it Paro or is it Yehuda? And Chazal have a need to say that it's Yehuda. And therefore we have Yehuda acting very, very regal and very, very royal. And he's slamming his fist down and he's speaking with authority and he's saying what will be and what is, and that's it. That's the way that it is. Now, I just have to ask you one question. How much of this is our imagination, or even better, wishful thinking? And how much of this is really what it says over here in the Chumash, which means that Chazal almost can't help but reading Psukim through eventual things which will emerge from it. And I know as well as you do that at some point Yehuda will be king, and it's not so far. Already next week Yaakov's going to speak about it, and eventually David's going to be king, and we're going to have a Ben David who's king, and we can then go on and on and on in terms of the Davidic dynasty. And as much as there is this indication from Chazal that it was Tamar that helped create Yehuda as king, I can just as easily make an argument. In fact, I can make a stronger argument that the one who actually drew out the kingship from Yehuda was Yosef. Okay, now, the only thing, and this is far more intriguing, the only thing we can debate then is, does he do this intentionally, or does he do this as an unintended consequence of picking on his brothers, that suddenly this foe emerges, this formidable foe emerges, this royal, regal Yehuda emerges. But entertain for the possibility for a moment that maybe it's something which Yosef absolutely wanted to take place, or also, let's go back a couple of steps and say, what royal Yehuda? Which means, yes, Rashi said he's speaking to him with anger. Okay? Now, is the anger... is it articulated? Does it come out? Or is it something that he's feeling inside? So as I said, all of these questions, I just want to leave for the moment. Yes, Rashi said it. If you look at one of the Balei Het, one second. Yeah, you have then furthermore Rashi pointing out, Ki kamocha kiparo, umidrasho, sovcha lukotel, lov bitzarat kamosha laka paro. Right? Aide ziknati sara, alayla chacha ikva, ikvata. You held, you know, Paro gave a hard time to Sarah. You guys suffered for that. And, you know, don't give us a hard time. Don't hold us back. We have to go home now. Our Egyptian vacation has come to an end. And now we're going back. And don't even think about anything else. Otherwise, you're going to run into trouble. So again, very threatening, not just anger. The Hadar Zakenim identifies Vigashel of Yehuda, Yerushalmi. He quotes a Talmud Yerushalmi. Now, there's more than one Talmud Yerushalmi. I did locate this, and I'll show it to you in a second. V'kariv levate Yehuda takif umitgaber ka'aryeh. That Yehuda, the lion, till this point, we never heard Yehuda's a lion. Yaakov's going to tell us this. So those words you can find in the Targum Yerushalmi, the Neophiti. It's there. We see that he's, as a lion, he comes out and attacks. In Bereishit Rabbah, Davar Acher, Vayigashel of Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia, Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hagasha, what does the word Vayigash means? He comes in, Limilchama, that he gets ready for war. And then it brings a proof to this, which doesn't concern me right now. Rabbi Nechemia, we'll bold that for you, says that it's Lepius, that he comes in order to try to make up with him. Third opinion, Zerabanan, is to tefillah. By the way, these things should remind you of something. We also have... Okay, continuing along the same way, the next paragraph, it's just next, in the Medrash Rabbah, in source number 6, it says, Miyad ka'as Yehuda v'sha'ag b'kol gadol v'alach kolo arba maot parsa ad she'shama Chushim ben Dan. It would be better if Chushim ben Dan... Right? Chushim ben Dan was... He was deaf. So he screams so loud that Chushim ben Dan can hear him in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So you have Yehuda roaring like a lion. So, and then it says that he's ready to fight. And it says Dan. Why? Because Dan is... Why Chushim ben Dan? Because Dan is also called a lion later on by Moshe Rabbeinu. You have the two lions coming together. And again, this is this wonderful fantasy that they're going to come in and they're going to so much anger. If you look, Kevin Shiro Yehuda Shakas, Avhemnit Maluchemu Ba'atuba Aretz Vasuotam Tlamin Tomim. He's again, he's ready to take the whole place down and it's over. Egypt is over because Yehuda gets upset. I'm going to ask you again. So how many of you are willing to tell me, yes, this is Pshat, and how many of you are going to say, well, maybe it's just a little Jewish fantasy? I mean, listen, I was going to prepare for this year just by listening to old Jackie Mason routines. I was going to get mad. I almost got mad. I was going to kill them. I almost killed them. I mean, it's wonderful. But is this really what it says in the Chumash? So again, hold on for me. With me for a second. It's interesting that in source number 7, which we may not have remembered, we have the word Vayigash Avraham. Now, who is Avraham Vayigashing over there? This is when he's told about that Sodom is going to be destroyed. Vayomar, Ha'af Tisvet Tzadik and Rasha. Now, are you willing to draw any comparison to Vayigash Avraham and Vayigash Yehuda at this point? And what is, before you look at anything else, before you get confused, right? Right? Before you get confused, what's Avram about to do? He's about to plea in front of God. He's about to, the closest of the three options that we had before, were they war? Is Avram going to war against God? Again, you could say that, but it's really stretching it. Lipius, tefillah, I mean, which one is it? It sounds like Avram's involved in some kind of... Again, it's sometime between Pius and Tefillah, and he's trying to get God to back down from this terrible thing. Nonetheless, in Medrash Rabbah, in source number 8, Vayigash Avram, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Chedri, Rabbi Adam. Guess what? We have the same opinions. Rabbi Yehuda, Hagash LeMelchama. What do you, again, with all due respect to Rabbi Yehuda, maybe he identifies with Yehuda. What are you talking about? That Avram going to war against God right now? It would be very dramatic to describe Avram that way. And then we have the other opinions, Pius, and we have Tefillah, and they read this Vayigash the same as the other Vayigash. Now, those things should remind us about when Yaakov gets ready for Esav, there hitkin atzma l'shul shadvrim l'doron l'tfilah u'l'milchama, which is really pious and prayer, right? Pious, try to make up, which is the gift that he tries to give him, and tfilah and milchama, which is interesting because we, again, I think that it's a comparison. Even though the Midrash says that there were three different opinions what Yehuda did, in source number 10, the Beit Yosef Lahava, he writes, Matzino Hagashah L'Tfilah Pius L'Mochama U'L'Kol Eilu Nichnas Yehuda. Yehuda did all of them. He's ready for Pius, and he's ready for Tfilah, and he's ready for Milchama, which I don't know what to say, because I don't know how to begin to read it like this. So now, I suggest everybody take a deep breath, and you're going to now very, very calmly walk away from this mode of interpretation, and you can tell me that you're absolutely justified. You can say it's Chazal, you can say it's Rashi, you can say it's Pshat, and there's only going to be one problem with that. And what's that? It's not Pshat. And you could say to me, who are you to say it's not Pshat? Nope. If you're still here listening, so then we'll have to proceed. But first, if you want, you can pick on the Netziv. V'yigash lov Yehuda in source 11. Lo nitbar er lofi apshat hagashazu litkorev liyosef mahi. He goes, according to Pshat, I don't know what it is. And then he quotes Chazal. He goes, no. Pshat is one thing and Chazal is something else. V'chi lo Yosef lo hayashomea t'varav b'malkom shamad adko? Meaning, why v'yigash? Why does he come close? That's what v'yigash means, to come close. V'gam areihim litzbin binotam. V'hadrash yadua hagashah l'shlosha dvarim, aval hapshat adayin mitbakesh v'yivu'ar lefaneinu. So he says, exactly, and I brought the Netziv so you shouldn't get upset at me. I mean, this is clear. This is, you have to understand this. The word v'yigash means he comes closer. Do you want to go back and read it all again? As much as we want to see Yehuda the hero, the Yehuda going to war, but Yigash Alav Yehuda, he comes close. How does he speak? If you don't get it yet, how does he speak? He speaks in a whisper. How do I know this? He's very, very... He defers to Yosef. Vayomer bi Adoni. Yidaber na avdecha. Davar ba'ozne Adoni. He comes close and says, can I say something to you very, very softly? Yehuda is not, he's not loud, he's not stomping, he's not screaming, he's not ripping the walls down. Can you read the words, please? Yehuda is deferential, and he's being very, very careful. Adoni va'al yechab chabav decha, don't get upset, ki kamocha kaparo. What Yehuda is doing over here is he's coming and he is speaking to Yosef in a way which is very, very different. Again, he's going to give an argument, he's going to say certain things, and it's very interesting what he does say. It's probably more interesting what he doesn't say. He does not say a word in his speech about the trial and the events that just now took place. There's not a word about the cup. There's not a word about what they did. There's not a word about theft. All that it is an emotional speech about, and not even about Binyamin. It's about Yaakov. My father is old, my father is suffering, and you're increasing the suffering of my father. He cannot deal with this. And my so I'm going to now ask you again. If the content of Yosef's speech is, have compassion for my elderly father, do you think he's screaming that, have compassion for my elderly father? How exactly do you ask someone to have compassion? Do you scream to someone, have compassion? Or do you try to speak in a compassionate manner to try to get someone to have compassion? Which means sometimes, as they say, the method, I forgot exactly how it goes in terms of advertising, sometimes the message itself, right, how the message is conveyed is part of the message. Over here, I'll say it again, Pshat is Vayigash of Yehuda, he comes close and he's speaking softly and he's whispering in his ear, I have to say something to you. Sidebar. This is a sidebar in the trial. And he's saying, I'm going to bring up issues that have nothing to do with the trial. It has nothing to do with guilt. It has nothing to do with anything else. He goes, please, let's come to an understanding. Let's work this out. You think somebody over here should be punished? Punish me. take me, let him go home to his father. His father can't take this. So I'm going to say it again. When you realize the content of what he's saying, do you really think that he's screaming and threatening him, I'm going to take this whole place down? Do you really think that's what's going on over here? And by the way, if he is, then why is he saying that, take me instead? If he's screaming and threatening, I'm going to bring the whole place down, we're leaving now. We've had enough, right? Say one more word and we're going to destroy the whole place. Why is he even offering to stay behind? There's no reason for that. Do you understand that? It just doesn't really work with what's being said over here. So again, I'll say that I know and I understand as well as everybody else does over here why it is... We explain it the way that we do, and I understand the same, just as well as everyone else over here, how we've been taught this. It just doesn't say it. And again, you don't want to accept my opinion on this. So again, look at the Amik Dover, look at the Netziv. He says, you know, what's going on? Lo nir lufi apshat hagashazu lehitz karev li Yosef mahi. He's coming close to him. He's talking to him. Right? Going to pshat, what's going on? Right? Yosef can't hear from what... No. It's not a question of hearing. It's how he's speaking. We still have to explain the pshat of what's going on. The whisper. He's speaking in a way that no one else can hear. And that's why it says that he's speaking in his ear. He's doing it in a way that no one else can hear it. Initially, now this part, we could spend a lot of time on this. I don't want to spend too much time. And I'm going to do it a little quickly, and a number of commentaries are going to go here, because what they're wondering about is something which we've observed many times, and that is the negotiations are bizarre. As soon as they're accused, they say whoever has it will die and the rest will be slaves. Why are they offering that? The intelligent thing should have been, well, if you think there's something in our bag, there's something really strange going on in your palace, because last time we left, there was something in our bag that we didn't put there, and we take no responsibility whatsoever for anything that you find there. That's what they should have said. We take no responsibility. To say whoever's bag it's in should die, and the rest will be slaves. Why should the rest be slaves? So, any of you who haven't read Dostoevsky recently, Crime and Punishment, because these are people that want their punishment. These are people who, especially in the events of the last number of months, ever since they've come down to Egypt, have been reminded about a really sordid event which took place in their lives, and that was the sale of Yosef. And why are they reminded of it? Well, first of all, going down to Egypt should have reminded them of it. The other reason is that Yosef, unbeknownst to them, is reminded, right? They don't know it's Yosef. He's reminding them of it. He's done all kinds of things to get them back to this point of remembering it by leaving one behind and sending all the others back and sending all the others and putting money in their bags. The last time they left with money in their bags and left a brother behind, it was the sale of Yosef, which means Yosef is forcing them to remember the Mechirat Yosef. I mean, again, there's no question in my mind about this. And they finally have come to this realization. They're guilty. They may not be guilty for stealing the cup. They may not be guilty for other things, but they have guilt. Again, the articulation of whoever's bag it is will die. That's what Yaakov said when Laban chased him down in a similar scene and went through all the bags, and he said whoever's bag it's in should die. So they, under pressure, speak like Yaakov did those years ago. But in continuation, the rest will be slaves. That's their invention. Why? Because they know that they all deserve it. And then when it comes in Binyamin's bag, and they say, and the response is no, whoever's bag, you know, that one will be the slave, and the rest will go free. And then when that one turns out to be Binyamin, that makes no sense, because he's the only person here who's innocent. So these negotiations are strange, and they insist that no, we'll all stay as slaves, not just Binyamin. And Yehuda's counter argument, no, the rest of you go. So they're saying we'll stay and be slaves, and he says we'll go. No, we want to be slaves. You want to go. Why in the world do you want to be slaves? And the answer is because they deserve to be slaves. So a number of people are going to try to turn this into halachic or a quasi-halachic conversation. So with that, you can begin to understand the Netziv. And he says, the achim amru mitchila sheim tzur oto omet. Originally, they say, whoever's bag will die, kidin u mishpat hagonim beit hamelech, which he assumes. So anybody who steals from a king should be put to death. okay, he didn't like my explanation. I like mine. Mine is that they're speaking like Yaakov. No, what can I do? Vamoshe lamar hu yeliyah eved klomar eineni melech veini yochol lanisho yoter mini muso medina l'kol adam. So he's doing a chakira now in Egyptian law, ancient Egyptian law. Vinei achar etza Yehuda haya mivaksho lachlifo sheyishiv hu eved tachet binyamin. And now Yehuda wants to make a deal. I'll stay instead. V'gamze einu lafini musay medina. That doesn't go according to the rules. V'ef shelasod kein ela parat. Only power can do it. And that's why he says, Kamocha Kiparo. No, you can also do this. You can make up the rules. You are almost like a king, and therefore let's change the rules over here. And even though it was found in his bag. By the way, if this was really where he wanted to get to, if you take the guilt out of it, what he should have done initially, and I don't know how many of you have been involved in drug smuggling, but one of the ways that you should do this is that you need a mule. Right? The mule is the drug, the one who smuggles. What you should do is you should put it in someone else's bag, because therefore they feel no guilt because they don't know that they're carrying anything. So Yehuda right away should have, meaning if this was his intent, right away he should have said, it's mine, I put it in his bag, and he didn't even know it was there. He could have said that right away, and then it would have been on him. But initially, they think that they're going to finally be punished, and they deserve the punishment. It's only when the counter offer is, no, you guys go, and only he stays, that's what made no sense to them. And that's where Yehuda now wakes up and comes to these negotiations and this conclusion, okay, I'll stay and let them... Let the rest of them go. So he's saying that Yehuda is speaking in Egyptian and he's whispering, but I love the whispering part. And again, he comes back to this again and again, and he understands what does Vayigash means. It means that he's coming over and he's whispering. Rav Avraham ben Arambam, who may very well have met the Sultan in Egypt as well, and knows, you know, how you speak to leaders in Egypt and how you don't speak to them. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Nigash b'mokav nigash b'dibo klome b'ma'amar v'ometz u'ma'amaro v'al yichar apcha af al pi she'in b'maro mashi yach isoto. They didn't say anything that should get them all upset. L'fisha hanegisha el hamalachim v'ribo yedrim lefneim. Just coming to talking to a ruler. You can't talk this way. V'nagut lehem, and so on and so forth. V'hu Yehuda kvar natan tam lirad shem yichos. Z'pshita dekra. U'ma chutz mizedrash. He goes, pshat over here is you're talking to a king. You have to be careful when you're talking to a king or a ruler. And again, I love that. Ze pshita dekra. Just like now you see the Netziv follow that all those years later. Masha, everything else. Masha amru. What Chazal say, chutz mizeh drash. Everything else is drash over here. The anger and he's going to explode and he's going to take the place down and so on and so on. And the lions and chushim and Dan even hears it and so on and so forth. No, it's very nice, but it's just not pshat. The Ramban, who also met kings in his lifetime, ki kamocha kaparo uvamora gadol ani medaber lefnecha ki ilin medaber lefnei paro. Again, I'm doing this with great deference, with great honor, and so on, because you can't talk to kings like this. So again, I'm just going to pause there for a second and say, do we understand yet what's going on here? There's no question that we have this wonderful fantasy of Jewish power. And then we have the reality. And for most of history, I think people enjoyed reading the powerful Yehuda more so than reading the Yehuda who's very, very frightened right now about what's going to take place. And you see the different types of approaches over here. And again, the insistence of Rav Avraham ben Arambam, it's, now you realize it's the Ramban, and it's the Netziv, and they're all telling you, no, all of the learn how to distinguish between drash and pshat, because there's a pshat over here. And in order to get to the pshat, I want to now point something out. But first, I want to go backwards a little bit, and then hopefully try to make a little bit of sense of this. This whole relationship, and I can say the relationship between Yosef and the brothers on the one hand, or specifically Yosef and Yehuda on the other hand, there has been a great deal of what we can call action and reaction. And that's why I said before, was all of the reaction intended, or did some of it happen? But there, when we get to Vayigash specifically, we're going to get to this point of a really interesting action reaction. And I want to note, I'm going to go out of order for a moment, and I want to note something the Kli Yakar says, because he he thinks that this has happened earlier, and then we're going to go back a little bit earlier even. And you know what the question really is? And maybe the question is relevant for the parsha, and maybe the question is relevant for today as well. And that question is that when you have dysfunctionality, when you have a family which fell apart, how exactly do you create unity afterwards? How exactly do people come in? Do we really expect that we're going to move from hatred to love? Is that really, you know, what's going to happen? Or maybe there needs to be some other steps along the way. But first, I want to point out something which I think is remarkable that the Kli Yakar notices. And it's in verse 17, back on that pasuk, Ki kamocha kiparo, kimo shira'ui l'chlok kavod l'malchut v'she'en l'deber kashot b'nei ha'melech, ki chamat melech melch malchei mavet. Because kings are in charge of life and death. Kach ein nachl deber gavoa l'hotziat atak mipiv neged kol ha'shamim. U'mimeni lamduze. And he goes, and I've learned it from you. This is where it gets interesting. First of all, again, he goes along the same thing. It can't be that this Yehuda of our fantasies is really what the pasuk says. Ki Yosef amar kum ridof acharei nashim v'hisaktam dafka kishetasigem v'tiyes samuch lahem tidaber ba'oznam inyan hagavia v'lo titzok alayhem mirachok laria alayhem kiganav.
Now,
this is fascinating because you could tell me he just now made this up. What did he say? He said that where did Yehuda, again, action and reaction, where does Yehuda get this idea that he should speak softly and speak respectfully, even though there's a disagreement? He said he got it from Yosef sending this emissary to go and chase them down, and he doesn't like scream from the outside, you guys are under arrest and you guys are thieves and stop in your place. He comes over to them and he speaks to them softly. Again, did it really say it there? I'm not convinced. But I find it interesting that he sees the reaction of Yehuda based upon the action of Yosef. Now, personally, I actually would have gone to a different action. And that would have been, I would have gone back to that meal that they shared. Because I feel that meal is actually, it's dramatic. And it has to be healing as well. Which means, again, they don't know it. They don't know who Yosef is. But they're all sitting together. Do we have any other time that we know of all 12 brothers sitting together? Maybe all 12 brothers are sitting around Yaakov's bed when he's about to die. According to Chazal, they're all together surrounding as they bring him to the funeral. But now they sit together, and it says as they eat, and they drink, and they get drunk. But by the way, that means that they're off guard already. That means they feel comfort. That means that they feel this sense of camaraderie. At that moment, Yosef, I think, took away a great deal of the anxiety that existed. I'm not telling all of you to drink to deal with your anxiety. Everybody, make your own choices over here. Make good choices, people. But Yosef took away their anxiety. Yosef calmed them down. Yosef had them all sitting there, and they were relaxed. And they were relaxed enough that their guard was down, and there was a comfort. And that level of comfort that existed with Yosef, I can now continue towards that Kli Yakar, and then the cup is missing, and now Yosef, you know, how can you behave like this? You know, after this, I don't want to use the word friendship because it's too strong, but after what just now happened, how can you repay, you know, the decency with indecency? But it's fascinating that he reads into this, that there's a soft tone to it. And therefore, and when they insist upon the stronger punishment, by the way, anybody else could have said, okay, you'll all go to prison. Why not? But no, that's not what's going to happen over here. Only the guilty one. We're not going to behave like that. And it's interesting that Yehuda's reaction is seen from something that Yosef does. And I said, that's something that I want to point out. Now, why? Because you can disagree with me on this. You can say, especially the Kli Yakar's point, we don't see it. Why are you making this up? But there's a stronger point. The stronger point is what happens afterwards. And that's, once we get there, we're going to have a harder time ignoring, and it's at that point that we're going to have to then start figuring out what's going on. Because this is not the only Vayigash in the Parsha. There's another Vayigash. And the other Vayigash, I don't think you can really make a mistake about. When Yosef reveals, right, the big reveal, and by the way, anybody who doesn't know this, you know, here is a spoiler alert. I just want you to know that this guy turns out to be Yosef. I apologize. So in source 14, Vayomer Yosef el Echav, Ani Yosef, Od Avichai. So obviously they're frightened and they're scared. And now tell me the tone of voice, right? This is always our first line of interpretation. It's a tone of voice being said. How does Yosef speak Pasuk Dalet? I don't care right now how he spoke Pasuk Gimel. I want to know how he speaks Pasuk Dalet. Vayomi Yosef Elachav, Yeshuna Elai. That's said very softly. Yigshu Elav. Now they come close. What happens when they come close? He whispers. It's the same Vayigash. This Vayigash is incredibly warm. This Vayigash is a reconciliation. Vayigshue, Vayomer, Ani Yosef, Achichem, Asher Machartim Oti Mitzrayma, Vata Alta Atzvu, Va'al Yachar Beinechem, Ki Machartim Oti, Hinei Ki Lamich Yoshlachani Hashem Elokim Lefnechem. This Vayigshu, all, you know what, as a first step, all that I would ask you to do is that, you know, it's been obvious all the way through, even if it hasn't been obvious, that we have to constantly compare Yosef and Yehuda. And then therefore you have to compare Tamar and Eshet Potiphar. And there, again, all these things that you have to constantly compare between the two, and there's comparisons and there are contrasts, and who's the real king and so on and so forth. But we have, in this week's Parsha Vayigash, we have two Vayigashes. I'm sorry for that. But we have two Vayigash. We have the Vayigash of Yehuda, which again, in our fantasy, and that's, by the way, now you realize how bad that fantasy is and what it did to us. It didn't allow us to understand Pshat and the Chumash because we're so hung up on Yehuda's power and strength and who Yehuda is that we fail to notice that both of the Vayigashes are really the same. And they're both attempts at reconciliation, its attempts at some kind of kindness. Again, what is Yehuda asking for? He's asking for, please, there's an old man, don't let the old man suffer. Let's try to make a bad situation as right as it could be. But he's speaking softly, and he's pleading, and he's appealing to his emotions. And now I'm going to ask you, okay, so, and you know what, if we didn't notice something, on that first Vayigash, Vakarev Levate, he came close to him. That's the way the Targum translates. By Yosef, Ayom Yosef, Kruvu. It's the word Vakrivu. It's to come close. Don't ignore the Targum. In both, the Targum is telling us that both of the Vayigashes are the same. It means come close. Come over here. And now I'll ask again. When you tell somebody come over here, what tone of voice do you use? So it could be some of you, you know. If you abuse your children enough, you can say it loudly. You can say it with anger. You can say, get over here. That's not what's going on over here. That's not it. It is a whisper, and that's why Ba'aznei, it is a whisper that comes over, and Yehuda is pleading, and he's speaking, again, from a very deep emotional place. And now, again, think about the action and the reaction. Maybe it was that meal that that Yosef had with his brothers that creates some type of camaraderie. Maybe, as the Kli Yakar said, when they're chased down and they go and the guy speaks to them softly and doesn't humiliate and doesn't scream and doesn't embarrass them, that Yehuda feels this possibility to try the same. Again, I find that very interesting, but that's less interesting to me as much as over here when Yosef then says, Gushuna Vayikshu. Which means, as afraid as they were, they could have recoiled and gone away. But when he says Gshuna, what changed? Again, Pasuk Gimel was V'lo yichlo echav lanot otokin v'lu panav. They're terrified. V'yom Yosef elchav Gshuna ilai. So I'll ask you again. So what tone of voice did he say it in? There's no question. He says in a very soft. I know you're going to tell me, but he said this in Hebrew, and now he spoke. No, he spoke the previous. Again, ignore all of that. Please, please, when you try to learn, identify the tone of voice which is being said. This is said with compassion, and it's said with love, and it's said with this attempt of reconciliation. You know how I know? Because he says, Gishu Nailai, and what is their response? Vayigshu. They come close. What changed? They were the previous pasuk. They were afraid, and they were running away. And now v'yigashu. And now they're coming close. Why are they coming close now? Because now Yosef spoke to them with this love, with this brotherly love. Ani Yosef achichem. This point of saying I am your brother is what they hear. And you know what? Maybe they felt some kind of brotherhood. They felt something by that meal where they sat together. Maybe they felt it, and enough for Yehuda to be able to, okay, we're not family, we're not brothers, but you know what? I have a father. Maybe you have a father. Maybe we could do something. I don't know if I ever told you this story. I know a fellow who was in yeshiva with me, and he volunteered for the army. And after he volunteered for the army, he, again, this is back in the early 80s, and, you know, in those days, it was not that easy to contact one's parents. We did not all have cell phones. Even getting to a payphone was not all that easy. And writing letters sometimes, you know, would take you a good couple of weeks. But anyway, he joins the army. He's there for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, for a month and 2 months. And his parents don't hear from him. And his parents are terrified. Finally, his father, and they have no idea where to write, how to contact him, whatever. So finally, his father does something. His father writes a letter to Menachem Begin, who was the prime minister at the time. And he says, Mr. Prime Minister, I'm a father and you're a father. My son is in your army. I haven't heard from him for months. I'd like to know that he's okay. So the next day, or the same day, after Begin gets this letter, there's a phone call that rings, and the commander of the base gets a phone call, and the prime minister's office on the phone. So, you know, he gets to the phone immediately and answers, yes, what can I do? And he says, do you have a soldier there by the name of, I can't tell you the name, I know the name. And he says the soldier's name. And he says, yes, we have such a soldier. And he goes, can you please bring him? I need to speak to him. So he comes on the phone and Begin says to him, he goes, you think I have time for you? I have a country to run. Can you write your parents a letter? I don't want to hear from your father again. So he hangs up the phone and he says, yes, I'll do it right away. And then he hangs up the phone, and then now all the officers are waiting outside and they say, do you know him? He goes, yeah, of course. He's a family friend. And this guy was treated so nicely in the army afterwards, but like he lied through his teeth. He never met Begin, and he made believe he did. But this point, I'm a father, you're a father, and you know, you got to take care of my son. So over here, Yehuda could be saying to Yosef, listen, I'm a son. I'm sure that you have a father someplace. Maybe you have an elderly father. And, you know, after to have compassion. We have to make this right. We have to do this better. But my point is that the two vayigashes are the same. That's really the point. And if I had to prove this, I don't think I have to prove anything. But if I had to prove it, then I'll say it again. Take a look at the Targum. The Targum uses the same word in to explain both of them. I'm not going to bother doing it. If you want to, you can. In source number 18, that's really the Chidah, and also 19, they go in and they try to explain all of the halachic issues about what they should have done in terms of the negotiations and what punishment was coming to them if they were Jews, they were non-Jews. All this is very interesting, but it doesn't interest me, at least not today. Now, I do want to go back to Vayigash and coming close and so on, and there was that Rashi that said, you know, if you do anything, you know, we're, you know, hold us back, you're going to get treated just like that previous, you know, Paro did. I'll note that when Sarah, and this is a different case, and I know it, that when Avimelech, there it says, lo karav aleha, you know, there was a lack of whatever Vayigash means. We'll leave that for now. And let me point out something else, and then hopefully all this will make sense. Yes. In source 21, we're going to go back to where Rashi told us to look, and you're going to say, you don't know why Rashi told us to look there, but there's going to be something which is going to be interesting, which will emerge from this. So just give me a couple seconds. V'yikav Avram Mitzrayim, v'yu Mitzrayim et Yishaki, Yafayim Ha'od. She was very beautiful. So in Bereshit, who's beautiful? Sarah's beautiful. Rivka's beautiful. Rachel's beautiful. The cows are beautiful. And Yosef is beautiful, right? The cows are also, the fat cows are described as being beautiful. At least we think so in our house. Vayurato Sarai, right, and so on. We'll skip a little bit. and Vatikach Isha Beit Paro. Ula Avraham Hitiv Bavara, Vihilot Son of Akar Bachamarim Bavadim Shvachot Vatanot Gmalim. Vinga Hashem at Paro, so that's what Rashi told us before. That's it. He gets struck. Nigaim Dolim, Vit Beto, Aldvar Sarai, Eshet Avram. Vaikra Paro, Lavram, Vayoma Mazotasitali, Lama Loigaratali, Kishtachai, Lama Martachoti, Vikachotali Shavataine. Ishtacha kach v'leich. Okay, why didn't you tell me your wife? V'yitzav lof paro anashim v'shechu oto v'tishto v'tkola shelo. And they'll go and they send them away. Good? Good. So keep that in mind for a second, and then we're going to try to make all of this connected. In source 22, we're going to see, now we're continuing, Yosef gives them state secrets. So far we have two. We had 7 good years, 2 bad years. There'll be another 5 bad years, right? That's Pasuk Vav, Pasuk Zayin. God has created this, you know, given me, you know, the situation. He gave us a thing, and so on and so forth. And I want to get to particular. Maharu Pasuk Tet, Valu El Avi, Vamartem Elav, Koam Abin Chay Yosef, Samani Elohim, La Adon Lakol, Mitzrayim Rada Elai Al Tamod, Vyashafta Be'eretz Goshen. Now, as I was doing my Shtayim Mikra Ve'echot Targum, and I had already noticed my 2 Vayigashes, I wondered about Goshen. Did we just now bump into another Vayigash in terms of the root over here as being, is this similar? So, of course, none of the commentaries say this. But go on to the next thing. Come to Goshen Vayita Karov Elai. So I hope you realize that that's a little much now, because that's what Vayigash means. It means Karov, to be close. And he says, come to Goshen, to be near me. And at this point, you hopefully will realize that it's a little much. And Yosef now says, and I'll take care of you. I'm going to treat you like family. I'll treat you like brothers. I'm going to give you food. I'm going to take care of you, and so on and so forth. So the staying in Goshen then becomes a little more interesting. And then in 23, but Yudut Shlach, right, Lufne Goshna, Vyavo Atzer Goshen, and again afterwards comes Goshna. So take a look at the Pirkei de Rabbelezer, and then we'll see a Zohar, and then we're going to stop. That's it. So at least you know what else I need to do. Rabbi Tarif and Omar, Boto Alayla, Shenilkacha Sari Imenu, Oto Alayla Lel Pesachaya. Okay, makes sense. Okay, so then it fits into, you know, by the way, that's great for Pesach. You know, we go and tell the story, so God did the story for them. It made it much easier. So there you go. Paro gets struck with plagues. Wonderful. In order to know in the future, this is going to happen. Shenemar, and so on and so forth. Rav Yeshua ben Korcha, Omer, Me'avato oto paro katavlo bishtar k'tuva kol mimono. That because that Paro was so enamored with Sarah, he wrote a shtar ktuva. Now, here we are deep in Pirkei de Rabbelezer territory. He gave all the money, kol mimono, ben kesef, ben zav, ben avadim, ben karkaot, v'katavla et eretz goshen la'achuza. So guess what he gave her? He gave her eretz goshen. L'fichach yashvu Yisrael b'eretz goshen, shehi shel Sarah imenu. So Goshen belongs to Sarah. She got it in the ketuva. So I find that interesting. In source 25, which is still the Pirkei de Rabbelezer, Vishama Yosef Sheba Aviv Ligvul Mitzrayim. And he heard he was coming to Gvul Mitzrayim. Now that was interesting, because we read the pasuk just now. Where did he come to? Vayal Lekrat Yisrael Aviv Goshna. So now this, by the way, drives the commentaries crazy. Where's Goshen? It's Gvul Mitzrayim. Which side of the Gvul is it? Is it Eretz Yisrael or is it Egypt? But don't tell me it's Asa. I don't want to hear that now. But it's the border. So if you feel like you'll look in footnote over here, it's Lamed Aleph and Tet Vav. You want to know why it's Lamed Aleph and Tet Vav? Because it's from those two places in the Pirkei de Rabbelezer. It's from the one which is in source 24. That's the Lamed Aleph. That's when he gave her Goshen, right? Lefichach, Yashvu Yisrael. They stayed there. And then the other one, which is source 25, is Gvul Mitzrayim, Ted Zion. And if you look at these two over here, you'll see that he's going to bring sources that will debate, and some will argue that Goshen, right? Yisesh Klev B'Shem Tosfo Ala Torah, V'radak, She'eretz Goshen, Hi'anem V'Sef Yeshua, V'himi Eretz Yisrael. That this is part of Eretz Yisrael. And the Radal, or Luria, who wrote these footnotes, Avol Inira Kach, Sherei Paro Marli Yosef Meitav Aretz Eretz Ramsef, so Shehu Vaday Mitzrayim, so he's not convinced of this. But on the other hand, in this other one with Gvul Mitzrayim, but it's Gvul Mitzrayim, so Gvul Mitzrayim would be with Canaan, so therefore it becomes much more interesting exactly where is Goshen. But nonetheless, Yosef says this because he wants them to be close, and now we can look at the Zohar. So what did I do? It's obvious what I did. I looked all over for somebody who's going to tell me that that Goshen is the same as the others. Tochazi vayigash elav tikravata da'alma ba'alma. That it means to come close, right? If you need the bor vayigash elav hitkarvut shel olam im olam, right? The two worlds, Yosef and Yehuda. Lachaze imze shekol ye'achad, moving towards reconciliation to become one. This is like the haftorah of the two trees of coming together, the Eitz Yosef and the Eitz Yehuda becoming one. That's what the Zohar is reading over here. It's reading by Vayigash, which means the Zohar is not going the same way of all of those commentaries that he's ripping. No, they're coming together. This is not an attack. This is Vayigash. This is an act of, actually, I'll use the word brotherhood, even though maybe I need a better word. Again, the same kind of idea of coming together. Furthermore, in Vayigash, so Hit understands, again, that Yaakov and Yosef coming together by Goshen, that's this reconciliation between Yaakov and Yosef. But Goshen means the same thing. It means the Hit Karev. It means to come close. Which means, essentially, what we see then, and I know this is not the way that we normally look at this week's parsha. We had three Vayigashes, or Gashes, if you will. And one of them was Vayigash Yehuda, and the other one was Yosef telling his brothers to come close. And the third one is this place called Goshen, where he says, come here so that we can be close. And all that I'm asking you to do now is, we have the same interesting word three times in one parsha. Maybe it actually means the same thing each time. And maybe all of them are about the same point. How do we become whole again? How do we become closer? Maybe sometimes it means you have to sit around and eat together, even though you don't feel love. Maybe you need to still sit around and drink even together and break away some of the anger and take away some of the anxiety and take away some of the feelings that exist over there. But the other thing is talking. They all talk in a way. And I know that we weren't able to do this before we actually understood what it meant, that Yosef reaches out to his brothers, and then Yehuda feels he can speak to him in a sweeter and in a softer, in a whispering way. And then Yosef speaks to them in a way. And sometimes the message, it's not just the message, the means is the message. It's the way that you speak is going to be part of the content as well. And therefore, the ability of becoming whole again starts off with speaking in a way of respect and of caring and all of that emotional baggage, which everybody's carrying baggage over here. And of course, the tragedy is that nobody knows the baggage the other one is carrying. I mean, does Yosef ever know through all of this, till this point, that Yehuda's lost a couple of kids? Does he know that Yehuda's gone has lots and lots of scars on him at this point? Does he know about the fall of Yehuda and the rise of Yehuda? He doesn't know about any of these things at this point. And does Yehuda know about the heroism of Yosef walking out of the, running out of the bedroom of Eshet Potiphar? Can Yehuda even understand such a thing? Yehuda, who fails in that particular area, can he understand it? There's a medrash that says that I can understand everything. This matron, a Roman matron, says, I can understand everything in the Torah except for a 17-year-old running out of a room of a woman who's willing and offering. Because that's the one thing I can't understand in the entire Torah. Everything else makes sense. Anything else I can wrap my head around. That I can't wrap my head around. But that's Yosef. Does Yehuda begin to? They don't understand. None of them know what the others have gone through. And maybe they need to have other times they can sit and they can speak and they can work things out. But the beginning of the reconciliation is Vayigash. And the Vayigash is dramatic. And the drama over here is not banging on the table. It's not shaking the walls. It's whispering and speaking softly and saying, I have a lot on my mind and I have a lot on my heart and I have a problem and maybe you can help me with my problem. I have to try to make something right over here. There's too much suffering in the world. Let's try to take away some of the suffering. And that's what Yehuda's speech is. That's the content of his speech. And when you realize that's the content of the speech, then also we should realize it's also the tone that he delivers it. And when Yosef responds in the same way, Vayigash. And afterwards, when we're going to now try to make ourselves home as a family, what's the perfect place for them to live? Why don't you guys live in Goshen? Because that's close, and we'll be close, and we're going to try to make this up. Can you just erase all of those scars that exist? Not easily. Can you just say bygones and forget everything which has happened? Not easily. But the first step towards all of this is we see both sides are doing it, and they're reaching out, and they're talking. But not just are they talking. They're talking in sweet, soft tones. And that's the first step to trying to become whole again.